David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 348. I'm your host, Steve Raker, or am I an LMD? Fortified here in the comic book bunker as time and space bend freely around me. This episode, I'll have WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit join me to talk about both the first 12 issues of 1992's Doom 2099 series and the next installment of our ongoing New Warriors coverage with issues 15 to 17 of that book. But first, I want to declare that Marvel Noise is a proud member of the Deliberate Noise Network family of podcasts, and that you can stream or download new and archived episodes over on marvelnoise.com. New episodes are announced and images are shared on our Facebook and Twitter pages. And don't forget to listen to our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we talk about the books that we can't discuss here. Also, the Baltimore Comic Con is still on. Tickets are still available at BaltimoreComicCon.com, taking place October 23rd through 25th at the Baltimore Convention Center, right there in the Inner Harbor tourist-trappy area of Baltimore. I mean, with that date, this still could happen. The guest list is always fantastic. Check it out on the website. Creators, staff, and attendees all love this show to death, myself included. So consider coming out to Baltimore. Before I start the dog and pony show by bringing on Andrew and Kevin, I want to tell you about a few books I've recently read and enjoyed. The first couple are from the now it seems discontinued Marvel OGN line of hardcovers. I like this oversized hardcover, like thin hardcover OGN format that Marvel had over the last, gosh, 5-6 years now, maybe? The first is the 2017 OGN Deadpool Bad Blood, which was plotted and penciled by Rob Liefeld. So, you know, it's cool to see Liefeld returning to the character beyond the occasional variant cover. And in the course of this tale, we also get treated to Liefeld's Domino, Mutant X, or Weapon X, Kane, whatever they called him, and even X-Force and Cable via a flashback. Story is like, well, it's fast-paced, and the art is Kirby-esque, and it's power and dynamicness, but at times the backgrounds are kind of scarce, and the larger-than-life action sequences seem to cover for, you know, a lack of story depth and scope. But that's fine with me for the purposes of this book, because it's a fun ride. Fast-paced, action-packed, drawn looking like tight Liefeld. Not a bad outing. The other is Starlin's last trilogy for Marvel Comics, Thanos, the Infinity Siblings, the Infinity Conflict, and the Infinity Ending. Written by Jim and drawn by Alan Davis and Mark Farmer, this one reads like a farewell love letter to Thanos, Adam Warlock, Pip the Troll, and the Titans of Saturn overall. After reading this amazingly enjoyable trilogy of OGN hardcovers in 2018 and 19, I can totally understand Starlin citing irreconcilable differences and considering the bridge, to him, way too burnt by Marvel. Thanks to editor Tom Brevoort for greenlighting and simultaneously publishing this arc of original graphic novels from Thanos' creator, Jim Starlin, and writer Donnie Cates' arc on the then-monthly Thanos title. I mean, that's what an editor should do, is help choreograph and schedule things and pace out the releases. While dissimilar in that Cates' story was as much a vehicle just to promote that new Cosmic Ghost Rider character, the similarities here are too significant to ignore. Thanos in our present gets manipulated by a future all-powerful version of himself to ensure that he becomes him, and dealing with the end of the universe and all that, and I mean, it's inconceivable that Marvel would undercut Starlin's and their own big trilogy story, and it cost them. Starlin has said he won't work for Marvel again, which is our loss, because these original graphic novels have been great. Thanos, Warlock, Pip, Star Fox, Kang, Hunger, The Living Tribunal. Big doings that span the end of time through Thanos' acquisition of ultimate power and the absorption of the big cosmic entities like the Stranger and Galactus, and going back to the formation of the Infinity Watch, and even Thanos' early first appearances. Everything but Mar-Vell is in here, True Believers. This is a highly recommended trilogy. You really need to read this one. I mean, three. Infinity Siblings, Infinity Conflict, and Infinity Ending. Enjoy them. I also read Giant Size Ecstatics number 1 from 2019, written by Peter Milligan with art by Mike and Laura Allred. I couldn't help but think, they're back. I mean, it's like Ecstatics, the Next Generation, as the team, or descendants of the team, have to reform to take down another new version of the team formed by the son of a previous well-known team member. And another member that was thought dead is alive. This book is seeping with Milligan Allred X lore. Does a nice job of setting up hype for an on-the-last-page promotion for a new series. It's hopefully still coming out this year. That is going to be from Milligan and Allred, called The Excellent. That looks like a continuation of all this, so that's all fun. And lastly, I really enjoyed reading the Marvels epilogue from last year in 2019. Here, Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross reunite for their 16-page take on retired photographer Phil Sheldon's eyewitness account of the Sentinel stomping events of X-Men 97 and 98, complete with the skating rink crowd that has Len Wein and Dave Cockrum, Patty and Claremont and Lois and Clark and Julie Schwartz, and he even recreated Cockrum's little Easter egg of Doom skating in the Rockefeller Center Plaza ice skating rink. Really hilarious. There's also a 25th anniversary interview in the back, and Ross sketchbook pages to pad the whole thing out. And, oh, and Nova. And that's really cool, too, in that they devote a couple of pages to showing Nova on the scene, who was new at the time of this book. His book was about to be published, actually, so he was the new kid on the block, but it really was a good symbol of the passing of the torch from the heroes that Phil Sheldon, the protagonist photographer of the book that all the Marvel stuff has followed, and the heroes that his daughters, who's he's with on this Christmas holiday on in Rockefeller Center here, and his daughters are with him, and it's like Nova is the heroes that are no longer his Marvel heroes. It's now the next generation's heroes. Really cool. Good story. Amazing what they pull off in 16 pages, to be quite honest with you. All right. Time to bring on Kevin and Andrew. So here on the show, we don't always have the opportunity to comment on when one of the great comic legends pass, but it just so happens that today when we are recording this, we heard the news of Denny O'Neill's passing, and we know this episode is going to get a quick turnaround, so it'll still be fresh in people's minds when this episode posts. Denny was he's been around forever, right? Big wig in both Marvel and DC. But specifically for Marvel Noise, I wanted to mention, you know, some of his major works as a writer and an editor. He wrote Amazing Spider-Man 207 to 223, amongst those issues. He introduced Hydro Man and Madam Web. And those two Spider-Man annuals, Kevin, the ones with Frank Miller, the Doctor Strange Doom one, and the one with Punisher and Doc Ock. Those were both good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, he wrote Daredevil 194 through 226, following Frank Miller, having Klaus Janson as an artist for a while, and then eventually David Mazzucchelli. In those issues, too, he introduced Yuriko, or Gamma was her name, or something like that. Ogama, who would become Lady Deathstrike. And the big one that I remember from the time was he wrote Iron Man 158 to 208, which was the whole Obadiah Stane, Tony returning to alcoholism, and Rhodey taking over the armor, and the Ironmonger, and all that bit, and the Silver Centurion armor at the very end of it all. And it's funny, too, because
I remember us covering that issue 200.
That whole mega arc happened in between two different runs by David Michelinie and Bob Layton. He took over from them and handed it off to them, even though he wrote 50 issues. And he wrote Team America number 2. Don't overlook that.
I did not know that.
That's weird.
And also, he's credited for coining the name for the Transformer Optimus Prime. How about that? Bob Budiansky says it's so. And Andrew, you'll appreciate, in the late 60s, he also worked for Marvel, well, in the mid-60s, I should say, before he went over to DC and did the Green Arrow, Green Lantern stuff and the Batman stuff. But in the 60s, he wrote a bunch of issues of Millie the Model, 138 to 153, and modeling with Millie, 46 to 54, and Patsy and Hetty, 106 to 110. So he was all over those books.
I remember a friend of mine got a chance to meet him at a recent convention. Oh, he's such a nice guy. Like, concerned, obviously, most famously for injecting some real world concerns and politics for the company across the street. But I always noticed he was probably thought more of him for his editing from my youth. Although I do remember the story about him, the old Marvel Comics test that they used to give where he was got it to be a writer. But I remember he had various, I think he was one of those guys that in another life might have just not ended up in comics.
Yeah, I met him when I was a young teen in the early 1980s at an old school, like, hotel conference room convention in Colony, New York, which is adjacent to me here in Albany. And he was super kind to me. Yeah, he signed a couple of books. He looked at a bunch of my swiped drawings and gave me feedback, and even gave me his business card, which at the time, being a Marvel editor, was a Marvel Comics business card with Spider-Man on it and everything. And he was nice. He said, call me in a few years, you know, if you keep honing your craft, you know. How nice is that, right?
Oh, there's another world out there where Super Steve is a hard-working comic book professional. Oh, wow. To be in that universe.
I went as far as putting together like a college portfolio to try to apply to art schools, but then I was like, you know what? I really don't want to compete with this. But anyway, and I met him a few years ago in Baltimore again, and then last year he was here at another con downtown in Albany, which was nice to touch base with him again after all these years and share that old story with him, which he was surprised he was nice to me, he said. But as an editor in the 80s, that's how I really remember him too. He was part of the tone of a lot of books that were dear to my heart. He edited Alpha Flight, the Bizarre Adventures magazine, Daredevil, G.I. Joe, Ghost Rider, the Gruenwald Hawkeye miniseries that first paired Hawkeye with Mockingbird, bunch of issues of Marvel Team-Up, Moon Knight, Power Man and Iron Fist, Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man, and the Spider-Woman. And Team America, too. I guess they had a fill-in already at issue 2 because he wrote and edited that one issue.
Somehow I missed that on the first go round. Maybe I need to go get those back issues or something, but I never took plunge on Team America.
Maybe issue one was like double sized and the art team already needed it, you know, the writer already needed a break. But anyway, well, rest in peace, Denny. His work's going to stand on its own and will stand the test of time, I'm sure. Good stuff. Kevin, Andrew, glad you could join in so that we could talk about the first 12 issues of Doom 2099.
Thanks for having us, Steve. I was shocked that Marvel Unlimited seems to not treat the 2099 line with the appropriate respect.
I'm not shocked.
And I was, get the joke though, shock, because that's what they say.
I was also doing the I mean, there's other verbal tics in here too beyond shock, but I think shock is the most familiar one.
So I decided, in light of I haven't been going to the comic shop lately for no reason, and I decided I would pick up some of these off the eBay, and I was mainly looking at the Punisher 2099 for the Pat Mills stuff, and I got a bundle that included some of this Doom 2099, and when I told you boys, you were like, those are good books. And I'm like, well, I bought a whole bunch of them. and it's just been a joy. Might I say, while I've been enjoying, I like Marvel Unlimited. I like my omnibuses and trades and all that. Because I haven't been buying comics recently, it's also been really fun to return to floppies. Like, it's nice. I made myself with these 12 issues. I didn't read more than two a day. Which is normally if you got them all there, you read it. It was just nice to kind of almost be like it's the old days and I'm back in 1993 and reading comics. I mean, I never read these the first time around. By 93, I was pretty well out of the game. So I remember the 2099 line being introduced, but by then I just didn't have any money for comics. So the few I was buying, it was pretty well drying up.
These issues ran from the end of 1992 right through to the end of 93, written by John Francis Moore with pencils and inks by Pat Broderick. I love this book because it was, I mean, not since Marvel supervillain team-up in the early 70s did we have a Doctor Doom comic. And this was a Doctor Doom comic, and it was a nice twist on what they were doing with the 2099 world, which was to show, you know, a future generation of heroes that were somehow inspired by the heroes of our heroic age. This was Doom, or was it? And that was part of the fun.
Yeah, it's not exactly clear. I also like that it's like these things don't immediately go into, like, let's show you hundreds of different things from regular day in the future. Like, there's a lot of new stuff.
Yeah.
Or people don't remember the old stuff. And you're like, was there a reason? And they sort of allude to an age of heroes had passed.
Well, they have a clever logo design where the O's are his eyes, which I really liked. But I tell you, that $1.75 for the first issue might have also scared off late 90s or early 90s Andy. That seemed like hitting me the extra 50 cents for the fancy cover.
Well, remember, the first issues of all the 2099 books were the heavier cardstock covers because they had the foil, like, circuitry border around the outside of the comic.
I like that. We always have to ask you, though, Andrew, is like, that's a 90s thing, having like a foil cover and all that, but does this feel like a super 90s book? Like,
no.
The paper is I feel like the paper feels like old paper, like fragile paper that sometimes has little cuts in it and everything, so
and it
it's not
smell
super glossy or anything.
No, and it smells like an old comic.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean in a bad way, I'm just saying that it's got, this is a very much an artifact. Plus, during this whole run, they have the subscription. They're still offering subscriptions. And in my first issue, some kid filled out the subscription box. So I hope he went and got his comics. And
which ones did he want?
That's the weird part, is he didn't check any of those. What they said was copy this, because, you know, no one would want to deface their comic. But he filled it out, but he didn't include what books he was selecting. But I did like that it's... And I'm like, I hope he got his books, because as I've mentioned many times, I enjoyed getting a magazine subscription. And it was fun reading, like, Stan is still doing the soapbox. Well, some of the soapboxes. Yeah. It jumps around. And just all the ads. Like, I had... And I know you guys love this element, and I really missed out, I guess, was the trading card thing. When I was a kid, it was like sports. But seeing the ads in this, like, it was a whole... Like, there's everything... So many. Had a trading, and they ran full page ads, just like the video games. And it was just interesting to be like, I really miss this pop culture thing that happened. Like, it went from football and baseball cards to like cards of everything. Now I don't think there's cards of anything. I mean, except for the games or whatever. I mean, I'm sure they still make sports.
It's pretty rare. Like, everything pretty much had like a card thing, like everyone. And the other thing that really takes me back about some of these things is the old mail order comic ads.
Sure.
And there's like, I didn't even know there was a previews or advanced comics or whatever. Like, I don't really know where comics come from. So when you see these mail order things and they're of like comics in the future, or they'll have the prices of books, like, I would always scour those to see any extra information I could pick up from those. It was sort of like trading cards. Like, You didn't have information, so anything like that, you would pick up information from stuff like that.
And going back, reading old comics now, passing those subscription pages, I always stop and look over like what the line was at that time, you know, and try to wrap my head around it. At this time, the line was quite large, I must say.
Oh my gosh, there are a lot of titles.
Yeah.
The other thing, Andrew, remember with those old ads, sometimes if you had to fill out your name and address and stuff, if the order form was like part of the ad, you couldn't copy it. It was like only the original will be accepted.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, if I'm just turning the page then, nothing more for here for me to see, because there's no way I'm cutting this out of it.
No, and the... Like I said, video game ads, the trading card ads. I love the age of the comic book tie-in. So there's some ads for Toys R Us where you get a free comic. There's in the books. There's like candy bars had tie-in comics.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut had a tie. Like, I love this. I'd love to go down and track all these down. The other one I liked was the Zit Cream ads.
that Neil Adams studio did. You could tell it's Neil's studio.
Like, all we need now is like the Evel Knievel stunt bike.
You know what happened to trading cards, right? Is a company got the rights to do all the baseball cards. So like all of Major League Baseball was all coming out for one company, and then all the companies jumped to try to get their exclusives. So now like one company puts out all the NFL cards, and one company puts out all the baseball cards. And so it's like the market is so cornered and niche and high end. You wouldn't believe how much these packs are. Yeah, think of paying $25 for a pack of football cards, Andrew.
No, I never really got that. Like, I bought some of my friends, would get like the whole hockey card. So you would get the whole league. You could just buy the set. You know what I mean? At the beginning for, I don't know, like $50, and you get every card in the set type of thing. But I don't know. I just would rather spend it on comics. I just didn't realize, like Kevin was saying, every pop culture property had cards. And I'm like, it must have been. And I guess they could make them cheap enough, but I don't know. It just was like a weird phenomenon. And they look cool. I don't know. I'd always rather have a comic, I guess, than a bunch of cards about them. But hey, I miss that. Miss the era of cool cards.
So,
anyhow, the first time to get to that cool future.
The first four issues of Doom 2099 is the establishing arc. It sets up Latveria 2099. It is run by this like corporate despot named Tiger Wild. Only one Y. I was thinking they could have gone two Ys, you know, for Tiger and Wild, but no, they resisted and only did one of them.
Yeah. And it's weird sometimes when you're reading this, the reflections of on today. Like some guy will like comment on bacteria or say, get those viruses away from me. Or like there'll be weird references like to stuff. And then you'd be like, I'm at the time. I didn't pay any attention to certain things. But the way things are right now, I'm just like, oh.
Especially when we get to the next arc.
Yeah.
And there's a gypsy resistance to Tiger Wild, but it's more in thought than in actual action, because they don't have any weapons, they don't really have any numbers, no infrastructure, Andrew. They can't really mount a true rebellion.
No, but it was a nice tie-in to the traditional Latveria.
Right.
Like, right now, it old Latveria. All these horrible things, and the Tiger Wild takes it over, and it's kind of a dump. And so by having the gypsies still there, it helps provide the link to when Doom was there, because those were his people. And so when Doom shows up claiming to be the Doom but with a amnesia, my favorite comic book trope, stolen right from the soap operas, he doesn't remember anything. That's convenient. But I really think that quickly they establish a pretty cool crew. Like, they have his different factions of all the people that we're going to see. Like, they just do it in a very professional, fast way, which I liked. I had known Broderick, probably the book of his I love was Lords of the Ultra Realm, which is the wrong company. Apologies, everyone. Don't jump down my throat. But I really liked that book.
How about his...
It was a very...
He did a great run on Micronauts.
Yes.
And...
But for me, the Lords of the Ultra Realm, that well, the weird, it was a whole created world by Doug Munch.
Yep.
And it was in, like, I think it was on one of the imprints that had, like, classy paper and all that stuff, and, like, a whole kind of fantasy realm, but it was linked to America, and the guy could go from our world to the... I don't know, it was just one of those that caught my imagination, and I was like, why didn't this ever go anywhere? And then it feels like something that never went anywhere.
Yep. Yep. Broderick also did a bunch of issues of Captain Marvel back when the Rick Jones Captain Marvel days.
Saw him at the Baltimore Con, I believe.
Right.
That you and I did.
Yep. He drew a Loki for me. He drew a cool Loki on my Marvel Villains jam piece.
We both met him then, which is rare.
As of a few years ago, he had his own book that he's still working, not for maybe also for the big two, but he had his own. I bought a couple issues of whatever. I don't remember the title of it, but.
But this is Marvel Noise. This is Marvel Noise.
Well, I had to give my connection to Broderick.
There is a gypsy fortune teller who works for Tiger Wild, and there is this cool black chick mercenary with what seems to be Wakandan heritage, and there is a cyber surfing visor wearing guy.
Cyberspace Steve, remember I always talk about the cyberspace and going inside computers?
I assume this is what you do on a day-to-day basis, Kevin.
I unleash little robotic men inside computers, and then I put on my visor and I'm like, time for another day of it. I manipulate the ones and zeros.
So Doom gets beat pretty quickly, but gets into the world and gets some new tech so they can redesign his outfit. How did you guys like 20? I like the design in general, but by getting rid of his dress, they really made him bulked out a little. Like, I like the design. I just wish he wasn't so muscly, you know?
Really?
Well, I think it was cool because you had to have him appear. Well, you didn't have to have him appear, but it was cool that he appeared in his original garb as we remember him, because that lets us, you know, that gives weight to the argument that it is the true Doom. And the idea, you know, the trope of the amnesia and everything, well, that particularly works in this instance too, because again, we don't know, it's poignant that he doesn't remember the time just before he, you know, appears naked in the burning field like Savage Dragon or something. But this is Marvel Noise. This is Marvel Noise. But, you know, he doesn't remember if he's the real Doom or not. So he's even questioning himself, although his arrogance doesn't let him do that for long, you know, his ego. So, you know, he gets the new armor. He makes it out of adamantium so that it is nice and strong. I mean, this is X-Men Wolverine riding high time for Marvel. So, you know, adamantium is all the rage. They make his armor out of that. It's a substance he's familiar with from our time. We don't know how widespread its use or knowledge of it is in the future. So it could be a surprise for his foe. I think it's cool.
What about his face? I'm like, it's like Baron Zemo all over again. Not the face.
Right. That's just it. When he faces Wild the first time and gets beat down, he does get scarred up. And it's just that he raced to that confrontation too quickly. And, you know, the other big thing is that he's forgotten. You know, it's only 100 years ago, but he's really forgotten. His castle is in ruins. It's not even the capital of Latveria anymore, and people barely remember who he is, let alone, you know, whether he is the real Doom or not.
But well, I feel like people are like, this is a Doom bot, or this is an imposter, or just something.
That's a funny scene when he first appears to Tiger Wilde, and Wilde is like, oh, it's another Doom bot. They show up every few years malfunctioning, you know. There must be a million of them out there.
I like that the 2099 world, I think, owes a debt probably to Blade Runner. It's that kind of mix of high end and low end. So you have the ultra rich with all this high end tech, and then a bunch of poor people that live down in the lower levels. And the world is controlled less by countries than by giant multinational corporations.
It's almost like that Valiant, like, corporate wars idea here, too. And you're putting, like, every dystopian thing in here as well.
Yeah, so it's that fun mix of high tech and low circumstances and companies. And so that builds intrigue that's perfect for Doom, who's a strategist.
Yes, exactly. And he works on this grand scale, right? That's what made this book different from the other 2099 books. Spider-Man, Ravage, and the Punisher were all dealing with street stories and how, you know, the corporations were just these big, looming, all-powerful Big Brother types, and you're more getting stories of what's happening on the ground. But in Doom, you see the stakes played out between these, like, nation-controlling power brokers. Alchemex, Pixel, Latveria, Wakanda. It's just a different scope than the rest of the line, and it really fleshed out and expanded the 2099 world outside of the city.
Yeah, I didn't remember Pixel. Like, I remember some of the companies, but other ones I'm just like, I totally have no recollection of.
Well, Pixel didn't last long, as we're going to find out.
Probably why. But yet Doom feels like Doom in here too.
Yes.
And it's not, and he's not like, oh, he's not, they're not weakening him by like, oh, he always does the wrong mistake or code or something, and so he'll get defeated again. Like, it's not like you're necessarily following like a supervillain.
Credit to John Francis Moore, because he really kept Doom in character. Like, he found Doom's voice here. And even when he's doubting himself, he's really doing it in private, you know?
The only thing I missed was it would have been funny if, maybe he does, or if he would have made a bunch of Doom bots.
The fact that he has to rally the gypsies and earn their trust, building the armor, just the act of doing that helps facilitate that, because he finds an old, like, storehold that he had from, you know, 100 years ago, and only who would know about that? Only the real Doom, right? So he's now armored up, powered up, and he has to go retake his throne. You get to see Doom go from being the prey to being the predator. And you get to see Kirby crackle 2099 too.
And I thought the pacing was good, like four issues for him to show up, learn the world, kick down Wild Tiger's going to come back, clearly. I mean, you know, he gets blown up in a mountain, but that's not going to stop any good supervillain. But it just was a nice, like, okay, that was like a nice amount of real estate, I felt, to put us in the world. Like I said, establish that side case. It's the next few when we start with five.
Yeah.
And do while I enjoyed it, it's really weird. They do an extended stay in their version of cyberspace where you have an avatar that's your personal entity that right. appears in it, which was a very Tron. Think Tron.
Yeah, but this is early 19. I mean, this is late 1992. This is the early 90s. So even the whole idea of computers and cyberspace and computer viruses are so cutting edge and so the frontier of things at that time that it's funny to see writers working their magic to turn it into funny books here.
Oh,
I
didn't mind. It predicts the future in certain, like, general ways, but then, like, the computer stuff, of course, when a few years go by, it's going to seem, like, out of date because they totally can't predict how computers are going to look or feel.
Oh, I didn't mind that. You know, William Gibson has all that stuff as well. What I thought was it just felt like they spent a long time in it.
Yeah.
Like, they had this very quickest, and then they spend more time kind of exploring the cyber world. Before they, I mean, they run some of the subplots, but yep. I just thought it was a weird balancing.
But that's like, so exciting to the writer and the artist because it is the new unknown, you know, the new frontier. But you're right, these first four issues are so nice and complete. I almost thought of it as like Doom the movie, you know, it was nice and nice and solid, a retaking the throne tale.
Yeah.
And then you have that guy that's encased himself in like that bubble.
Well, yeah, that's very Howard Hughes, right? He,
yeah,
the millionaire recluse hides himself in his hotel suite and doesn't let anybody in because of germs and lets his nails grow long and all that business. You know, you've heard all the legends.
You know, the other thing I'm in my
Kleenex boxes right now.
One of his advisors uses a little bit of magic, reads tarot to make her decisions, which I like because Doom was one of the few magic and tech guys together.
Right.
I mean, they don't lean into the magic stuff yet, but I like that they have that seed there so that was one of the things I really like about Doom. Like, you want to do a magic story? Cool. You want to do a tech story or both? Cool. He's got you.
Issues 5 through 8 are the cyberspace arc that Andrew was speaking of. Again, it's new, so it's romanticized in the way that comics do.
I like their little world because it's, you know, they can fight whatever bad guys. They have a little throwback to our era, you know, by having some characters because they were created by the computer from his mind, and they have a master villain. Go ahead, Kevin.
I'm gonna be watching reboots. Like a first computer-generated show and other things like that all around here, too, which is sort of an interesting give or take.
Fever like future virus hacker being who appears as a demon in the cyber realm, and he gets hired by the head of Pixel to mess with Doom's armor, which he does. So Doom and Wire, who is the cyber-surfing guy with the visor, they go into cyberspace and explore cyberspace, and you get to see it as a, you know, through two lenses, through Wire's eyes, who is familiar with the place, and then through Doom's eyes, where it's all brand new, and you know Doom is slowly, but more quickly than any normal person would be, is adapting to his environment and the variables that are at play that he can manipulate to make himself stronger there.
Yeah, he's learning about this new world. And like I said, now they have reasons to bring in elements from the regular Marvel universe. And it's the old trope where, like, if you die there, it can hurt your real body. And all those things that are done in, you know, even when it was just magic and you die in your dreams, you die in real life. So the stakes are high, but they can have as fantastical a storytelling. The other trope I enjoy is the person that's powerful in the magic or tech world, but in the real world is like just a schlubby dude. So that's why they build up their power in that. But I what I want to know is, Kevin, you definitely got those Shocktart sunglasses, right? what the ad is for $4.99. You could send off for your own shock card.
Sadly not.
Doom and Wire get deleted, and they have to piggyback on an old Pixel program called Paloma that they find, and Doom ends up becoming like Mondo Doom powerful to the point that Wire has to pull his plug to save his mind.
Yes, and the other comic I want to know if you got, Kevin, was the Stridex Zip Fighter. They had an X-Men collector's comic if you sent in, and I'm like, man, can I still get those? Are they still around? But I like and again, it's ideas of, instead of primeval forces like Eternity, here you have computer constructs and artificial intelligence and programs and sub-programs, and are they alive? Are they not? Will Doom go crazy? And he does. And that also allows in issue 8 them to have cameos with the other 2099 books. Very brief. As you mentioned, when Doom gets super powerful, it lets him show up into port. So now you have all these other quick, like, little one-page cameos. And obviously, I would say Spider-Man is the lasting legacy title. But I don't know. At the time, was that the hot book, boys, or were you buying other stuff?
I think Spider-Man and Doom are the ones that go the longest, have the longest reach.
Obviously,
as time has went on, I think Spider-Man superseded Doom just because he's Spider-Man.
When the books were rolling, when the whole line was rolling and established, it was Spider-Man, Doom, and the X-Men book that were the hot ones.
The X-Men book was a lot of fun. Two books, maybe?
Not at first. It was the same writer as this book, but Ron Lim on the art.
Yeah.
So issue number 9 is an Ernie Colone written and drawn fill-in, though it takes place in cyberspace, so it's part of the cyberspace trip, kind of, and fits in okay enough here.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, clearly a fill-in, but also it clearly works. Doom visits several historical moments. He's going to try and build parts of his personality because of his recent interspace internet conflict. This is a way for him to remember maybe the past, and obviously he's not going to, but it's, well, you know, he interacts with famous characters of the past like Jack the Ripper, who Marvel Comics seems to love.
Yep.
I was thinking of Thunderbolts. I'm like, oh no, is he going to meet the Thunderbolts here?
Issues 10 through 12 give us the fallout from this whole cyberspace arc. You get Doom facing Paloma again, and they end up negotiating a truce where Doom takes over the Pixel Corporation and gives the CEO, who is the germaphobe, he gives his body as a physical hull for Paloma to physically manifest into. Because he was a recluse, no one notices the difference in his personality, right? Because nobody talks to him day to day.
And you know what I want, though? I want this 2099 behind-the-scenes sketchbook.
I was just going to say, I love they put in, like, a little mini-poster splash of Doom. And on the back, there's a form. And I'm like, well, I don't want to ruin my mini-poster by sending in the form. But I was even looking online at buying one of those, I have to admit. I'm a sucker for it. But yeah, it's fun. Like, they have a whole sketchbook that you can only get by sending in proof of purchases from all the different titles. I like it. And also, doesn't seem like, especially in today's day and age, having like 4 or 5 titles does not seem onerous for a sideline. You know what I mean?
It always starts out that way, Kevin, but then, you know, starts multiplying.
Some of them are smart, and they always stay within a certain limit, but usually it becomes too much.
Zandra, who is the Wakandan, she goes home for some additional training, and meanwhile Castle Doom is being rebuilt, and Fortune, the fortune teller, that helps keep things straight, learns that her brother that she thought was dead lives and heads off to China in search of him. So everyone sort of splits off to follow their personal quests. Xandra the Wakandan returns to Wakanda 2099, and we get to see a little bit of what's going on here. she learns her grandfather's head is kept in suspended animation, so she recruits Doom to come help finish making him, like, building a body for... It's like a total Silvermane remake. It's like Black Silvermane.
So you're saying that Futurama ripped this off?
Well, the frozen head thing has been a long-standing gag. Unfortunately, when they're resurrecting him, it goes haywire. Doom is on the side trying to hack in to their systems for his own. Again, he's always going to look out for himself, too. But one of the Panther Guard doesn't like this abomination, and when he interferes, the grandfather goes crazy. So issue two is just a big smash-up.
Isn't he the Panther? Not just one of the Panther gods, but isn't it? Because you're thinking, like, well, where's the Panther 2099? And it's this guy, and he's kind of a petulant, not really seemingly worthy of the title, and he doesn't want to see his grandfather reanimated, so he comes in and starts shooting up the place, and of course, instead of ending the experiment, he makes it go horribly wrong, and now Mr. Stay Puft is turned into a really bad thing, you know?
Yeah, and Doom has to battle him, again showing his cleverness, while hacking in to Wakanda. And at the end, it's that whole, like, when he defeats him, the guy really wanted to be defeated. He didn't want to be a monster type of story, which is perfect for Doom. Like, he's happy to kill a guy and still end up the good guy.
I liked, too, that the cybernetic body of the Black Silvermane here is all vibranium, and Doom's armor is made of adamantium. So when they're clashing, you know, Doom is thinking of the properties of each and, you know, what that means as they're trading blows and stuff.
Plus a giant insert in this one for the Punisher arc story war journal. They have like a 4-page insert for Suicide Run. I don't know if you guys remember that crossover. And then I did not read it to not ruin it, but they have a whole bit on the New Warriors, like a fake magazine interview with some of the New Warriors. Like it's got Speedball and Night Thrasher being interviewed, and you know. It's also got Namorita. Yeah, but I didn't want to read it because this is a few years ahead of one of our other segments for longstanding fans, the New Warriors coverage we're doing. So when we catch up, I'll read it.
But I like that, you know, the end of this arc ends up with Wakanda as an ally, and at the end of the cyberspace arc, he ends up with the Paloma program running the Pixel Corporation as an ally. So he's starting to put things together in this new world of 2099. He's starting to build some alliances for Latveria. And again, we're seeing stories kind of on this grander scale of what it matters for the whole Earth and how they interact. I think for three arcs, having the solid establishing arc, then going off into cyberspace and having that end with Doom as something more and Latveria having this new ally, then we go to the Wakanda thing, which is fun. We're further exploring more of the 2099 world, and he ends up with them as an ally too. So we'll see where that goes from here if you guys want to continue this journey and read more of this title.
Of course. It seems like they have a lot of long-term plans. I don't know if it was always like that planned out, but certain things he says and you think, oh, he's just boasting or that's Doom, it's like it actually sort of comes through later on.
Well, what I like is that he's the only character so far in this 2099 thing that we have a baked-in familiarity with. So even though he's a bad guy, we might be more disposed to like him because we kind of know him and everybody else is new, like the new Punisher and the new, you know what I mean? So I think it was smart if you're going to pull one character possibly from our timeline to put it there. Well, even though he's a bad guy, like we kind of know Doom, so it might make us more inclined to like him and root for him over these new corporate heads that we're just meeting now for the first time.
It is kind of a Thunderbolts thing in the way that it's like bad guys versus bad guys, but he's usually fighting worse bad guys or stuff. like he's not going after a hero and like murdering them or, you know, kind of stuff like that.
Well, except for the Black Panther grandfather, well, but he wanted it.
So,
what are the things that are going to care, like matter for him as he moves forward through the series? And you come upon, like, will there be nostalgia for things? Will, you know, will old alliances or conflicts with different beings or places affect how he chooses to interact with their 2099 counterparts or offspring? It should be interesting.
You know what's funny? The issue 4 has that cover where he says Tiger Wild the First. And I remember one of my friends pointing out, that's a weird way to introduce yourself, the First. So that we had, I remember us speculating, sort of like, what about the Second?
He never thought he was going to be overthrown, so he thought he was going to be the first of a long line, but not so much.
It's just funny.
All right, so that was the first 12 issues of Doom 2099. Now I get to pass the mic over to Andrew and let him lead us through our next New Warriors segment.
Warriors come out to play. Well, listeners, it's Marvel Noises. Sometimes requested segment, our continuing coverage of 90s hot sensation. No, before you say it, we're not back into Thunderbolts land. We're talking about our New Warriors coverage. Kevin, ever the New Warrior himself, suggested a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away that we also cover some other 90 great comics. And I had a chance to pick up the omnibus cheap. And had been sitting unwrapped on my shelf. And I'm like, you know what? We did the Thunderbolts. Let's move on. So we find ourselves up to the fall of 1991. We just wrapped a compelling Namorita story. And we're on the precipice of New Warriors 15. Our crew for this journey is myself, Andrew. I was still reading comics at the beginning of this. I think I remember a couple of these, but not really. I was buying them, but not so much reading them oftentimes, and buying kind of haphazardly without access to a regular store nor regular finances. Kevin, of course, was firmly entrenched, an impressionable youth, learning how comic books were made. 91, you would have been what, 8, 9, Kevin?
I wasn't even reading New Warriors yet.
No, you.
But I distinctly remember getting at least a couple of these issues, like for a birthday present or something.
Yes, and then didn't you hunt these down as back issues at some point, or a bunch of them?
Yeah, definitely, because I was like multiple stores trying to complete a run type of thing.
And then Super Steve from the Bunker also joins us, who claims he only read the good ones back in the day.
Right. Yep. By the time it became Fight Warriors, I was out of there.
What's Fight Warriors? They totally replaced the team. So there's another team that comes in, and the title's New Warriors, but the book is like a romance now, and it's just Millie the Model, and you're like, why is this still named New Warriors? That's what's going to happen to this book. Interesting.
Well, we don't want any spoilers, Kevin. We need you to do is put the listener in, it's September 1991, you just got home from your babysitting gig. You put your money in the jar. You crack open your new issue of New Warriors 15. What's going on? Where are we at? Where's the team at? What's your head at? What's happening, Kevin? Who are our New Warriors as of starting issue 15? What's going on?
We have Night Thrasher, Dwayne Taylor. He has no powers, but he's sort of like the Punisher with a skateboard.
A natural conclusion of the 90s.
Better than Batman. You have Speedball, Robbie, the so-called Mass Marvel. I guess he has a bit of Ditko-ishness to him with all of his kinetic energy bouncing around every which way. Namorita, Namor's cousin. Doesn't travel in a submarine. Why did I write that down? Firestar, Angelica, from the cartoon. She has microwave energy. I guess she has a lot of amazing friends in here. I'm just riffing now. I barely have anything written down. Actually, I have stuff written down, but it's old jokes. So I'm making new jokes up on the fly. That's a peek behind the curtain here.
Wow.
Marvel Boy, Vance. Not the Guardian of the Galaxy guy. Yet. He's a low-level telekinetic. But he seems to be coming mid-level, I guess. He has stuff going on. Don't call him
Kid. It seems like he got more powerful when the cowl became like a cutoff and his hair, almost like the cowl blocked a little bit of the, almost like a face mask, you know?
It's a weird thing to describe with his, I'm trying to think of an example of something where like, that's difficult. But after you go through it once, you get like, it's still difficult, but. I don't know. It's not like you want to keep on getting punched in the head or something, but it's like, after I got punched out that once, it's not as bad anymore, but it's still bad. Like, it's a weird scenario. Nova. Richard Rider. Who we're very familiar with. The Human Rocket.
Yay.
And, I guess Silhouette's part of the team now, where she slinks in and out of the shadows, sometimes naked.
Well, she doesn't warrant a head in the corner box, but we'll consider her official.
Yeah.
Okay, boys, so fall of 1991, Infinity Gauntlet, Cap is approaching 400. What are you guys thinking? Any thoughts of the era before we get into the specifics?
This is before the height of the 90s madness, so we're still on, we're still going up and up.
Yeah, for me, I'm about a year and a half into getting back into comics, so I'm not only reading some new stuff, but I'm also going back and reading back issues and trying to fill in the holes of the books that I cared to kind of try to figure out what happened in between when I stopped reading in the mid-80s, so I was limited in the new stuff that I was reading. I didn't feel as beholden because I was also reading new old books, if that makes any sense, you know? So I was picky, and I was only reading New Warriors on and off when something on the cover caught my eye. And usually that would be Nova on the cover because they finally fixed his costume.
Well, the premise of the New Warriors was Night Thrasher taking, sort of like a cut-rate Batman, took his personal finances and assembled a team of disparate individuals. And at this point, I feel they're still sort of developing the personalities. The team is starting to gel. They're now reached a point where there's enough history. We're going to see some things that happened in earlier issues can now start to come back and develop. They've had some changes in outfits, which are good. We're seeing Firestar and Vance have a budding romance. A little bit, like I said, more character development. The mystery of Night Thrasher's two guardians, wards, the guardians. He'd be the ward who run his company and help run the new warrior ventures are also being developed. And they've had a few scuffs with some different teams. But I think the team's coming together. Like I said, for me personally, I feel like Vance is the one that probably needs the most characterization. I mean, some of them come in with a little bit of pre-baked characters or relying on regular archetypes.
Yeah. I think sales are up at this point, too, which is why the book continues and everyone's on the new Warriors train.
It's not like they're going to be in an Infinity Gauntlet or anything. They're not that popular yet.
Well, 15 starts with Psionics and a return, and as the cover tells us, wait till you see this issue's shocking ending. So we have them returning to face an old foe.
I like how all these covers for these three issues all have boxes on them. They're like, check this out inside this issue.
Well, they're back and they're ticked.
Apparently. And Nova's not ticked. And the fans aren't ticked either because they have a whole page splash here. And he's back in his proper costume. You look great.
Yeah, I'm sure Super Steve was pleased to see the return of Nova in his costume. And as Kevin hints, they give us the little rundown of kind of some of the benefits while acknowledging he doesn't have his alien supercomputer. He does have radio access, enhanced sensibilities. He hasn't mentioned the instant oxygen mask, but we'll see if that comes up.
Enhanced sensitivities. I like that. I really get what you're saying.
And we're still on the Fabian, Bagley, Malstead team, who we've seen for we might have had a fill-in issue or two, but that's pretty much been the bread and butter so far. Bagley, a solid, not only a great artist, but dependable, reliable, and good storytelling. Could have done without the stereotypical Nova breaks up a crack house storyline, but it was a good demonstration of his suit. And we get some pushing forward of some of the storylines. A lot of this is because they're the new warriors, they're younger. So we see interaction with their parents and family members and get a little taste of what's going on in the Nova household, which if you are a regular Marvel Noise listener, you'll know we're talking about his original appearances in other segments. Super Steve, now you can plug like that other Nova segments we do.
We do other Nova segments, and you'll get another one next episode.
I guess his parents don't die because they're still here. Or they come back as robots, and then the real ones come back.
Exactly. They could be Skrulls. They could be anything. We don't know. Mercifully, they brush over the annual crossover event a little bit.
Yeah.
Which we previously covered, and I still don't understand. To find the ultimate bad guy, the evil corporation. If it's not crack houses, it's evil corporation. This is the Gene Tech. And they created a superhero set who were not that heroic. Who the new warriors disposed of easily. And right now they're examining Terax's remains from the first issue.
Isn't that dangerous?
Not if they keep the components separate.
Oh, okay.
Just wear your gloves.
Wear your shields. Put on the proper equipment. You'll be able to handle Terax fine.
And in a nice moment, again, showing the skilled superhero comic book professionals that they are, they have a way to reintroduce us to the team they've assembled, Psyonix, and explain that they've been working on their powers, you know, doing the X-Men thing, but for bad guys.
And one of them isn't dead.
We have Asylum, a Dark Force Dimension character, that most notably known for with Cloak, I would say, but there are a few characters that get to use it. Coronary, which doesn't seem like a great name, considering that his ability involves manipulating matter in his form. Impulse, who's basically like a crazy Wolverine type, but without the personality or powers. Mathomaniac, I still don't understand. He can use math superpowers, which seems like some kind of teaching trick that they would have where you'd have to fill out a bunch of math problems and then he would join your team. And then lastly was Pretty Persuasion, who has a kind of Star Fox power to entrance you, except she's a lady.
Yeah, and they lean right into it. They're not pretending at all.
No, yeah, there's no hint. But once they get through the introductions, the team breaks out and they lay into the corporate suits.
Well, they want to kick butt.
With an absolute brutal Impulse has these spikes along his wrists. And I don't think I've ever seen a better use of a costume accessory. Like, if you just thought those were like little fins or whatever, no. Like, there's blood. He draws blood with slashing this guy in the back.
That's going to leave a mark.
It was quite...
Hey, this is the comic book that almost chopped off the Punisher's head with a skateboard, so...
Meanwhile, the New Warriors are trying out their new complex.
Yes, the New Warrior base, finally!
I thought they should have called it the Warrior Dome or something kind of fun, playing on the name.
In an abandoned mountain hideaway.
What?
In Midtown Manhattan.
Do you remember they visit this old place in, like, the DNA Nova run in the 2000s? They're like, oh, our old base.
Well, we know it's not a Thunderbolt base, or it would have been blown up long time ago.
Yeah. I hope there's no mysterious guy living in this base.
So as Steve hinted, suddenly Vance seems to be a lot more powerful, and they even remark upon that. I think they wanted to get out of the... He calls himself Marvel Boy, but I felt like they were falling into the old X-Men Marvel Girl trap of, like, having the telekinetic person who gets overwhelmed a lot. A trope. And same with the Invisible Woman back in those 60s books. Yeah. It felt like a lot of those mentally projecting ones were always... And Professor X would always use their powers and then be really tired afterwards or whatever. So
I feel like they're all growing, though, and learning their powers in a way. So
I won't be able to use my powers again for at least an hour.
I mean, there is a reason why they're focusing on some of these things. That's my
ominous hint?
Yeah.
Well, I never minded, like, for fans of older comics may remember when Johnny Storm used to only have so much flame. And then he would have to recharge. Sure.
Yeah.
So there were some, they used to build those and Tony Stark was always running low on power. Oh, and if he ran out of power, his heart would stop.
Yeah, he was always used to complain about his transistors.
So they used to have these.
He would take those little hip plates off and, like, plug it into the toaster.
Into the wall. Yeah. I can't go out tonight, sorry, I gotta plug myself into the wall.
So I mean, you don't want them to lean into it, become like the kryptonite problem, where they're always leaning into the one trick to get it out. But I like that. You know, it gives your hero a weakness that can be exploited instead of having to invent one. So basically, Gentech, the alarm goes out. Psionics is broken out. So they have to assemble the new warriors. And in previous issues, we've discussed how they were all given fancy computers and an alarm system and, you know,
you know, I'm surprised the scene with Namorita, it's a small panel when she's in a tub. Like, it's like de-emphasizing a scene when sometimes the titles, like, would emphasize those types of scenes.
I enjoy that they reference that she's still recovering from the fight in the last one. That kind of tight continuity is always nice. So she's going to keep some of her armor.
It's ugly.
I don't really recommend 14. The previous issue.
What? I do.
I felt like some of the armor stuff, like, you can only wear it for certain, like, it's a battle to the death thing, and now she's wearing, like, half the armor for fun. And I'm like, wait, I thought it was some kind of special battle armor time you donned it, you had to go kill your bat. Like, that was a whole plot point, and that was forgotten conveniently in this issue.
But she's not comfortable going out in a bikini yet.
I understand that. I just feel like they introduced this idea that the armor carries with it a significant, you know, you're committing to this thing. It's an honor system.
Yeah.
And she's just totally like, yeah, I just like the armor. Which
she's also a kid, rebellious.
Namorita in the tub is like Tony plugged into the wall with the transistors. That's how she recharges.
it's right out of the meteorite moonstone school of bad asymmetrical costume design, with, like, one side of you is covered and whatever on the other one isn't.
Yeah, so, like, same costume designer. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Not my. While I love a lot of the villain designs, it seems like the heroes always get a goofy one. But again, we get some backstory of the characters, how Richard Rider and his dad, who we know have a contentious relationship if you've been listening to our Nova segments, seem to be patching up things, and, you know, Speedball's a little more mature. But anyways, they all assemble to face off against Psionics.
I wanted to know, just for a second, I wanted to know where Nova's dad, where does he work currently? Like, I want to know if he's still the principal or something. Anyhow.
So it's your mix-up. But now, as we learn, Psyonix has been training, while the New Warriors haven't been. They haven't been doing nothing. They haven't been focusing the way that these people have about exploiting new aspects of their powers. So it's not looking great. And unfortunately, the head of Gene Tech is like, oh, this is not my dream. I wanted superheroes to help everybody. You know, we are the world.
Yeah, he's a little misguided.
So in a fun display of their powers and their fighting and trading off bad guys, and you saw the great, I enjoy the couple of pages we get of the fight sequence while they mix it up. And the side boss decides to go to the Tarek storage equipment, and he's going to become a superhero by merging himself with Tarek, which seems like a bad idea. I haven't even reached the page turn, and I'm like, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, definitely a bad idea.
But like I said, great action for me. I love the fight scene. He reaches into the chamber, crackle, 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 and Tarek has returned in all his Zipatone glory.
Yeah, I love that splash.
Nice. So Tarek is back, and we like Tarek, and he was seems to be a villain above the pay grade of, even though they took them down in the first issue, it was noted that he was not at full beans.
Yeah.
And so now that he's fully powered, and I will say the axe redesign feels weird. Or was that?
I felt that like normal.
Really, maybe I remember him from FF days, where I thought it was more a traditional axe looking, and less of like a weird kind of, like there, I always remember it like a battle axe.
Oh, well, maybe he tore his axe.
Well, I think it's more like the surfer's board or whatever, and you can generate it when you need. But he's back. And like I said, I love the tonal textures on him.
Well, on the cover, he's even split the corner box in half for issue 16. And they say guest starring the Fantastic Four and a startling surprise hero. Let's see if they show up.
Well, Tarek is unleashed. And they gave him a nice little kind of glowing with gold colored power.
Yeah. And then a giant Zipatone head. Bid farewell to this mortal coil. Terran, please.
Oh, at first I thought you said Terran, please. And I'm like, I think that meme hadn't yet started yet. But yes, and the power shoots out of his eyes. Fun design, fun character. Just that big, solid, bulky. I mean, look, a lot of people are going to say he's a bit of a dark side knockoff. And I can't really say they're that wrong. But, you know, he still has his funky little hairdo, which is enough of a difference. And he's going to town, and he wants his revenge against the fan, that very same Fantastic Four.
I like how the New Warriors will confront him, and then he's just like sort of ignoring them, and he's just like, I just want to get to the Fantastic Four, guys. Like, you're meaningless to me.
I always love when the heroes get blown off. Like, they used to happen to Spider-Man a fair amount and some of the other heroes where they're trying to establish their credibility. But what I thought was interesting was almost half the Psyonix team decides to stay. Impulse, the crazy Wolverine guy, and he is basically useless against Tarek. And then the mathematician magic guy whose power I'm unsure about also decides to stay. He might have some value. The one they're really missing out is, I wonder if they could have trapped him in like a dark force dimension or something. That would have been the one I think that would have had the most use, but you don't get to pick the superpowered characters that stay with you. The other fun thing about Tarek is now you can have the backdrops just be mounds of like broken dirt and pipes and
rubble,
overturned buildings and rubble and all that. So
lots and lots of rubble.
So they try and take it to Tarek, and he is like, look, I'm not weak anymore. Like, you guys ain't got a hope, you fleas.
I know, he's like, you're going to use that skateboard against me? Not going to work.
Yeah, and basically he breaks like all the bones and impulses by. which was fun. I can't remember, like, it was neat to see a character so quickly disposed of with some long-term issues, you know? Normally that kind of beatdown they spend some pages on, but here's just one shot and the guy's down.
Well, they kind of established that, yeah, he is definitely on another level, and there would be some consequences.
And then we have a side plot developing, dealing with Silhouette and Dwayne, and there's a character that wields some kind of master power and teleportation who's assembling a crew that we will no doubt hear more from later.
Yeah, what did you think was going on here?
I enjoy it, much like Lady Apocalypse and all the other kind of running plot lines. I'm a fan of this storytelling technique where they're running the next big bad some type. So I'm like, well, clearly there's going to be some kind of story about the guardians of Dwayne and how they came about, and they're not regular people. And there's some the weird connection, Silhouette developing that power. I'm like, clearly there's stuff to be mined there. What is actually going to be mined? I don't really have any theories. Don't really, not that I don't care, but I'm happy to let them play that storyline out over as long as they want, because I got an omnibus.
He calls himself the left hand. Does that mean there's going to be a right hand of Doom?
Maybe we're going to see the hand. But in a fun moment, Speedball gets trapped in a pipe. And because his energy builds sort of like Sebastian Shaw as he bounces around the pipe, he builds up enough power to actually damage Terrax a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how far Terrax goes.
And at that point, Terrax is like, okay, you know, I was willing to let you kids go, but now you're all toast. And I'm going to let you have it. I don't care. I've got enough Zipatone for all of you. And at that point, Nova's like, I'm out of here. And everyone's like, oh, don't leave us. But they're like, we ain't got time for Nova. We're going to try all this stuff. The mathematical guy tries some math gambit where he divides by zero or something. Again, not really sure how that math power works. To no good you end, and he ends up suffering through one of those tidal waves of rubble. Again, Terrax is so much fun for visuals. I think more fun than like Hydro Man or Sandman.
He's up
piles
there.
Of rubble is fun, yeah, to look at being thrown around. And just as he's knocked out, all the new warriors are laying, and Firestar's like, we're not going to give up. He picks her up to deliver the coup de grace. And what happens, Kevin?
He gives one of those typical speeches to her about, ah, oh, you've earned my respect. And just before he can do anything, or some approximation of that, and the Fantastic Four show up.
All of them carrying, and you said we were out of the 90s excesses. How would you describe these guns they're all carrying, Kevin?
These are definitely massive guns. This reminds me of Operation Galactic Storm, when like Iron Man was like basically had like that Mr. Fantastic gun, but then you also realize that it's Terrax, so you might need a lot of. It's weird to see Susan though with the gun too. I'm like, does she really need the gun in the backpack with her powers?
I like that they gave one to Nova. It just feels very like they went and got Cable instead of Ben Grimm has a. They have a gun big enough for his hands. Like they all brought. Clearly, these guns were made for them because Johnny's has to be, you know, able to handle the heat.
Yeah.
Like Sue and Nova and Mr. Fantastic can move their body around, but Ben has to have ones that can fit his giant hands to fire. So.
But it's such a great shot too, though.
Yeah, they're all, it's a giant double page splash to end the book where Terrax is excited, the Fantastic Four there, and they're all there with their weapons. Sue is doing the invisible force field traveling thing like Iceman. So she can kind of use her invisibility to fly. Not sure how the other two got there. I don't see the flying bathtub in the background. But
it's off in the distance. They don't want to lose another one.
Thinking, I'm not sure I want Bagley to ever draw the Fantastic Four.
Well, he does draw the Fantastic Four again years later.
I know.
So that leads us to 17, which is...
Oh, this cover. This is where it's at. In this issue, the Fantastic Four, and then they have that little box where it says, plus, this time for sure, a surprise guest star. And things all holding his massive gun that's just for him. Here comes Terrax, kid. That's my thing voice. And then Nova's with his chewing his bubble gum there, making a bubble. He's like, piece of cake, and don't call me kid.
And the thing is smoking. Don't tell Joe Q.
That's right.
And Terrax gets the corner. And then we open up with...
It's the same scene.
All five heroes pointing a gun at me, which seems a little aggressive, Kevin. What did I do? And in this, except this time, I'm sure you noticed, Kevin, reading them back to back, instead of Nova saying it's clobbering time, the thing is saying it's clobbering time.
How do you know it's... Like, because they criticize the New Warriors on the last page for doing it. So the thing is like, all right, now that you've gotten that out of the way, it's my time, it's my catchphrase, I'm going to do it.
So, you know, this is the showdown they wanted. Again, ridiculously oversized guns on everybody. Two of them need backpacks, their guns are so big. And Terrax is going to take them on. And basically, Sue's able to shield them from his attacks. And these guns are supposed to cut him off from recharging his power. So it's one of those war of attrition where you just have to let him burn himself out strategy type. And meanwhile, the New Warriors are going to do crowd control where they go rescue civilians. Because again, you know, this is a little bit out of their power league, except Nova, who has a gun.
Yeah. Who has the most power, probably. But he still needs a gun.
But, you know, then now they're saving civilians, showing they're the good guy. You know, this would never fly in a Zack Snyder Superman movie, Kevin. They're saving civilians.
I wasn't going to go there, Andrew.
I mean, they save a pregnant woman. Like, shouldn't she just be eaten by a wave of destruction? But Bagley seems to have a lot of fun. Basically, every gun, they don't just fire rays. They fire, like, twisty, curly-Q rays that look like the Ghostbusters or something.
It's true. Well, they're special guns.
Yeah. And so Terrax is just taking it. He's willing to use up all his juice. The problem is, because he's melded with a human host, he doesn't have his interspace style. You know, the Heralds of Galactus notoriously would be pretty crappy if they couldn't travel between worlds.
Yeah.
So they glue that limitation in. But we get a nice shot of Firestar, completely Firestar powered out, not holding back. It puts her microwave setting on 10, Kevin. 10. That's like you can cook a burrito in like 30 seconds.
Yeah. I guess she wants a chance to... cut loose on occasion, because in that other issue she got one of the other guys on the team, and then she's like, oh, did I kill someone again? So that's always like on her mind, and it's not like you have to worry about, you're not gonna not go Terrax basically.
No, he takes all this. And so after Fantastic Four and some of the New Warriors unload on him, they're in a final face-off. Reed's gun, I think, has gotten bigger since the issue started. And he's like, I'm going to fight you. And Reed Richards is like, oh, I didn't need to. I was just stalling for time till I brought the cavalry in.
Well,
and
he on made a page collect turn, call.
It's a full-played splash of the Silver Surfer.
Nice.
Coming in low and hard with a little circle box of Terrax's face, like, looking very sad. Oh no! Oh noes, as the kids say. And bam! They go at it cosmic power style. But Sue now is able to contain the damage. Like, because they don't want to wipe out all of New York City.
It's probably good.
And the Surfer decides to take Terrax for a little stroll. You know, being a Herald of Galactus, he's familiar with interstellar travel. And at this point, he is no longer bound to Earth. Man, I'll never forget reading that Silver Surfer comic. Steve, I'm sure you remember where the trick was he could leave Earth, just not under his own power. I felt that right. I couldn't decide if that was clever or stupid.
That's still one yeah. of
those moments where you read it and you're like, well, I guess it's a loophole, but man, it seems thin. I don't know, Steve, clever or stupid? What do you think about the?
Like you said, a little of both. I mean, now you needed to get the Surfer into space somehow.
But I think the Surfer has been watching a few Star Trek episodes. Well, we'll put you on a planet, and maybe some year we'll come back to it and see what's happened.
Yeah, he just has to hope whoever the current Herald of Galactus is doesn't decide to eat that world. But that would be also a good way to get Terrax back in circulation. I mean, the nice thing about these solutions is it takes him off the board, but not permanently.
Yeah.
It's very reasonable that in some way he would be, like I said, any number of solutions that could get him back in play, but he's off play for now.
And it's not the last time this will happen to him.
Yeah, and the left hand, again, kidnaps more mysterious people. This time it's a four-eyed enforcer who is disappointed about losing $35,000 a year job tax-free as an enforcer. Not sure what mob this is, but 1991, did 35K really seem a lot for a criminal?
Yeah, it doesn't seem... Better than are they not a making a lot of money, or is his boss keeping all the money? Like, I guess it's decent.
But I like it because it's the four-eyed enforcer. I think he has four eyes. Maybe he just has four glass lenses, but I assume there's eyes under all of them. And makes a Dark Shadows the soap opera reference, which I appreciate, and decides to go with him. So now that pot is boiling well, and we get some more backstory on the different characters, Robbie and his parents. Now remember, for those of you that didn't listen, Robbie's mom joined a environmentalist cult. She's an actress. Ended up in Brazil, and Nova had to spring her. So she know, or the, all the New Warriors had to spring her. So she knows that he is Speedball. And then yeah, Nova's Andrew, parents also know who he is.
Oh, go on, you don't Steve, get sorry. To choose your parents. You don't get to choose your parents. I'm just saying.
And then Nova's sleazy principal dad, who we know is up to no good in the 70s, gives his kid a lecture about maybe he needs to remove himself so that he's not a danger to them.
I mean, it's I can see it.
Aunt May, an elderly woman on death's door for literally, what, 60 years now? She's somehow done just fine. Living with Peter Parker, so...
Well, there was that time that an actress replaced her.
There was another time where she was going to die.
I mean, her being old was more of a problem than her other problems, because she was always in the hospital. And she got attacked in the hospital, too.
Peter had to pay for that medicine.
It's true.
So, meanwhile, you know, the... romance between Silhouette and Dwayne seems kind of cool. Yeah. Like, it doesn't run as hot as, say, Firestar and Vance. I can't quite figure out if they're just friends or dating or what, but there's tension between his guardian, the two guardians, and her, because she, you know, kind of backdoor joined the team, as Kevin said. I don't think there was an official, and here's your New Warriors flight ring. Or your New Warriors ID card.
That's better.
You don't like the flight ring reference?
Boy, is there an awful look between... Like, they both give each other, like, death stares.
But Silhouette, I think they need to... I like that she doesn't have a crazy power set, but they need to work on how they're going to use her in combat. Like, the Terrax thing, I don't think... We saw her talking a little bit, but she really wasn't focused at all. And I think they need to find a way to balance. It's always hard. Look, that's why they tend to make the Night Thrasher, Captain America, Hawkeye types the leaders. Because they have the least amount of raw power, making them the leader. gives them a reason to feature them in the giant combat scenes. Just my two cents
about balancing. Wow, you figured out all the comic writing tricks, Andrew.
Well, I mean, you know, this isn't my first comic book, and it's pretty obvious. But still, it's well done oftentimes. Hey, one of my favorite Avengers lineup. Now, this is before she was No More Mutants, but I really love those Cap, Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and Scarlet Witch. And again, in those days, people were generally depowered, but that was not a... They were replacing, like, Thor and Giant Man, and or maybe he was just Ant-Man still then. But anyways, they were replacing some fairly powerful characters. Iron Man, for sure, with a weak... But I always think you can do a good lineup, but we've already seen some issues with what to do with Skateboard Boy. But we get the follow-up again. You see the kids being born and is named after Vance, which is nice. And they explain that the two people from Psionics are in bad shape.
Yep.
And will be in traction forever. Yeah. Getting slapped by Terax is not good, apparently. But it's nice. Like, I like that there is a... I thought there was a perfect amount of fighting and backstory and future story building. This is still... I feel this is still in that 80s era of storytelling. We haven't reached the gratuitous splash pages every third page and those sort of things that I, perhaps wrongly, associate with the 90s. Gentlemen, this is where you correct me. Say, no, the 90s was restraint personified.
No.
Masterful, subtle storytelling.
There was a double-page splash with Terax wrecking stuff, though.
There was a double, not, you know, back
and,
to back.
And right before that, there was a big zoom-in on his head, which is usually the last page in a lot of modern comics, which is kind of bothersome. And is like, probably, like, one of the worst cliffhangers. You go to that last page, and it's just some guy's head looking at something. A giant head. It's just like, what?
Thanos turning and smiling.
But I think these are, if you like that, like I said, that era when it's, they got a couple pot. And look, some of these storylines are going to go nowhere. Like, they're seeding a bunch of plants, and maybe they're not going to get to it. Maybe they'll get to them all. I don't know. But I like that, because having all these things happening means that if somebody later on wants to grab on something, they've laid the work, whether it's the current team or a future creative team. Plus, it gives the... lets you develop the characters more. But it's not like there's no action. I mean, there's pages and pages of the big blowout fight. So right in my wheelhouse of this is kind of what I'm feeling right now in stories. Pretty compressed, too. I don't know. What do you boys think?
It's fun. Yeah, I remember really enjoying these.
Yeah, they're good. And solid books.
And I definitely enjoy the bubbling subplots. Like, what's going to happen? What's going on?
Well, that's the hard part with these, is that, you know, you turn the page and finish, and then you see in my omnibus, the next is a issue of the Avengers.
Yeah, don't turn that page. Oh, I turn the page. Do not turn that page.
Steve Epting, Tom Palmer. That's not too bad. I'm okay with that. I think those guys are good. I know it's controversial. My hot button hot take of the moment: Steve Epting, Tom Palmer, good at their jobs.
But this isn't the Steve Epting that people probably have in their mind. Like, this is 90s Steve Epting.
I still like 90s Steve Epting, and I like all Tom Palmer. So
why do the Sons of Serpent on this cover, though, they look like Ninja Turtles?
Well, they were hot. It was the 90s.
Like, they all look like Raphael. I guess it's just the way it's positioned. I mean, maybe that's on purpose.
Well, that's for another time. But New Warriors, 15 to 17, we're moving into the 90s, folks. How long can we continue to maintain before everybody gets pouches?
Wow.
We already saw the giant guns, so... that's the next step. But hopefully you'll...
Maybe they'll put on jackets, too.
There you go. They seem ready for jackets, I'll be honest with you. The only ones that it wouldn't work on is Vance, because he has the cape, and maybe Firestar. But the rest, oh man, come on. Dame Rita's got the bare shoulders.
It all starts when one of their parents say, "Why don't you put on a jacket? You'll catch cold out there."
Oh.
But as long as the fans continue to clamor for it, we'll keep providing new Warrior segments. At least until we run out of new Warrior. It was nice that the Thunderbolts had like a clear trajectory.
Yeah.
And I had jumped on at the end. So I don't really know what the trajectory of the new Warriors. Will we cover their recent reboot from a few years ago? Only time will tell.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. You preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. You are a ghost and you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold, and have the story you never told. But now we see the light. We gonna stand up for right. Come on, get up, stand up. Everybody, stand up for your rights now. Get up, stand up, and don't give up the fight. Most people think a great God will come from the sky, take away everything and left everybody dry. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours right here on earth. And when you see the light, you'll have to stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. 'Cause we're sick and tired of this bullshit game. Die and go to heaven in Jesus' name. I know and understand. Our Father is a living man. You fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And now we see the light. We are gonna stand up for our rights. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up, don't give up, don't give up.